This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I feel quite honored to be here. Thank you, Grace. This is...
It's great to have you, and I don't think you need an introduction, but this is Angie Boisvane from Floating Zendo. Angie Boisvane from Floating Zendo.
All right.
She floated our way.
I did.
Right. He's a Dormayer in the Coban lineage.
So I understand that this is for especially those of us who are looking at limitations, and that limitations in the realm of a sitting practice is maybe a little different from how it is in ordinary life. At least as I walk around town, hobble around town at this point, and look into the faces of everyone, how much stress and how much misery is carried in so many faces, how afraid we all are at this point, that even so, there is another way or place that carries us in a way that doesn't eliminate the stress or the pain or the disability, but gives us a way to know how big our life is in relation to how we manage, how we navigate our little world. We are truly very large. We are truly of the universe itself, as Alan Watts said, looking at itself through our eyes. That's kind of amazing, really. So, I started getting unable when I fell face first onto skis and did something horrible to my knee, and then I had to get surgery, which in those days was a big deal, not so much anymore. And when I came back to the Zendo, I sat over there and a chair, and I'd never sat in a chair before. And I thought, oh, I could get up and walk right out that door. It was so amazing. And I realized that sitting on the cushion and tangling up our knees like this, our legs, our feet, we are made helpless to get up and walk out the door. Think about it. So it's sitting in a chair makes it a little bit more challenging. You really have to think, why am I here? Why am I staying here? Why am I not getting up and walking out? Then I got cancer. I got breast cancer and just came right back. I thought, so it's okay, not a big deal. And then a year later, I got a bigger cancer. And I thought, something's wrong with my life. Everybody else knew that, but it took me two cancers to figure it out. And so I quit everything. I quit my job, I quit my husband, my kids were gone. And I just took some time to look at things. Krishnamurti said we must be very, very alert. And I thought, yes, yes, let's be alert and see what this is. And little by little, I began to sit again. And it felt like such a mercy. Ah, oh, yes, this is where it is. This is where it is. And then little by little, from a reckless life where I climbed many mountains and took my families on crazy trips on Baja in kayaks and everywhere, all over the world, suddenly I couldn't do those things anymore. And I had a hip operation that went wrong, and permanently wrong, and suddenly I was disabled. The doctor said, you should get a blue thing on your license plate. And that was the worst thing that ever happened to me, I think, to put that blue thing on my license plate. I thought, oh, I'm sunk. My goose is cooked. There's nothing left. And of course, that was a lie. That was an easy lie. And I realized, again, it just takes a different kind of determination, a different kind of attitude, really. I am getting old, and old is a whole nother thing that goes along with whatever disability you have. And that's absolutely incredible experience. I started making a list of indignities. It was so amazing, one thing after another, and they were all embarrassing things, you know, really kind of yucky things, and things you wouldn't want to even mention to anybody, but they kept accumulating. And finally, I stopped keeping the list. I thought, I just can't do this. It's too depressing. So... instead, I've just kind of developed a way of being with it, just letting it be what it wants to be. And some days it's really not so good. Some days it hurts a lot. And some days it's really great. And I think, wow, it's over. And then I think, you silly fool, it's not over. It's never going to be over. This is a downhill slope, but there's no doubt about it. And so it's an opportunity in old age, especially, to see that there is an edge to this, and that at a certain point we'll fall off the edge, and that that's a good thing. I tell my grandchildren that I have to make room for their kids. I hope we have a world that they can have kids in. So it becomes a whole situation that I've come to, if not exactly appreciate, because it makes me very grumpy also, but to be interested in. It's really fascinating, and it's real. We live in so many dreams. I lived in so many dreams, so many imaginary heavenly realms, you could say, and ways I wanted the things to be, even though they were not quite like that, or even very much like that. And to be in a realm in which you keep being wakened up. I'm fine when I'm sitting down and I'm reading, and then I stand up and I go, ah, I wake up right away. You know, you have no choice. And it's a gift. It's a gift. Our life is a gift. Just breathing together is a gift. And to be able to practice this way is even bigger. One of the hardest things I had to learn as a disabled person was to receive help. Because I've always been able to take care of myself and taken pride in it. I was always so strong, and I loved being strong and well and able to take care of everything and everybody. It was so much fun. And now I can't do that anymore. And people are holding my arm, and people are giving me things to eat, and people are giving me rides in the car. And I think, oh, this is, I don't like this. But I'm slowly, slowly beginning to realize how limited I was in not being able to receive from others. That it was a hubristic, very prideful thing that I was operating from. You know, here's the great me, and I don't need you. And of course, I need everything. I need the chair to sit in. I need the floor to hold me. I need the earth to keep going. We are held by everything, always. Held by the air and the trees and the birds, the stars. So it's been a wonderful lesson. It keeps on being a wonderful lesson because my mind sinks into a grumpy place and I think, I don't like this. And then I think,
I've known you a long time and I have never once seen you grumpy.
You have, yes, you have.
You have to live with her.
Right. So I thought to share with you some poems. This is a new book that I've just published. Been lucky to have published by Hummingbird Press. And it's a book of poems called A Drum of Bone and a Whistle of Silver. And it's got a couple of old age poems in here that are really interesting. I thought it would be fun to share them with you. So this is the first one I wrote about old age when I was still pretty not knowing about it, actually. Each dish is contemplating work in old age. Each dish I know and touch as I touch my own hands and face. The forks know me. The bed's opening and closing is part of a story. When I tend the garden tends me. And when I go inside, my pockets filled with oranges, juncos and bush tits, conversations still fill my mind. I am so happy to be able to work, to act, to do. I love to touch, pick up, and move things. I love to go up and down the stairs. I feel so lucky to be digging up the iris, sweeping the walks, plowing garbage into the mulch pile. What a great life to be still living like this. You might call it work. I call it a fortune. I didn't know how easily I spent the whole thing.
It
was <For your fortune. laughs> the fortune was gone. Morning walk. I stumble on dirt and rocks in my orthopedic shoes and speak to the blackbird above about the beauty. Full of shine, it stops, then rises from reeds and wet with a C-minus whistle. The one red on it, a familiar shock. And I'm back to an ancient state of me, which I lived by a meadow, and not knowing words, heard this music and completely got its drift. This is when it got more serious. The old body. Is a road trampled and overbuilt. Is a train pulling into every station. Is a garden intensely dug and fed. The old body is a lopped tree, a river full of ruined tires and dozing trout, a radio with too many stations. Looking up, we're all blue sky inside. Casting down our eyes, we're rocks in our own path. Our breath, our yellow teeth, our crevices and cracks fold in and fade. We're opening thunder's door and dissolving as we pass through. And one more. This is called structures. The eaten beams refused anymore to hold up the house. Termite disaster, an excuse to begin again, a gift sometimes. And once the roof was on and pillars up, no wind could harm. And disaster became an excuse to find the humor in it. But nights and days have added up, and now it's late. Old friends gather, talk hurts, hearts, kidneys, joints. As slowly falling apart, we see ourselves dissolving like clouds. I actually made notes and forgot to look at them, as usual. But I think I've said everything I meant to. Oh, there's one last thing. And that is that in spite of however we manage to find ourselves, whatever the gift of our life is, that service is so important, that without having some way of reaching out, of giving, our life becomes smaller and smaller, and we lose more than just anything we can think about. We lose really the whole thing. And it's easy to get into a mode of thinking, I don't have anything to give anymore. What good am I? And I went through that thinking, oh, it's all over. It's never over. And there's always something that we can offer. Even if it's minuscule, it means something. And it's very important to keep that action, actually, that we are activity. We are not, frozen in place. We are always moving, always changing, and so we always have something to offer. Sometimes we have to look hard to see what that is. Sometimes we have to ask somebody else, what is it? What do you need from me? And that's a good thing, too, to know how to do that. So that's the last thing that I have to offer to you all. And thank you very much.
Will you accept questions now?
I will accept questions now, of course. Discussions, contradictions, whatever.
It would be good for you to state the numerical age you have attained.
Oh, I'll be 83 in a few weeks. By hook and by crook. Yes.
Do you have a particular poet that you like to read?
Oh, I love so many. I've gone back to old guys. I've gone back to Milton and to Shelley and to all the old-fashioned romantics, and it's sort of juicing me up in a way. But I love modern poets too. A local one is Ellen Bass, who is a friend of mine, and she's very good, and some of her pals are really wonderful also. So that little group of women writers are excellent. And I go back to Theodor Rutke and folks like that whole realm. So.
Try Mary Oliver.
Yeah, she annoys me, actually.
Okay. A little sweet.
She died recently.
I know she did. I know she did, and I honor her because she created so much love in so many people. And she just sort of overwrote herself, I think.
Yes, I did notice that part.
Yes.
You just take her a little bit at a time.
Yes.
A little here and there.
Right. In the beginning, she was wonderful, but you can keep doing that over and over, and then it gets.
The Leaf in the Cloud is fantastic.
Yes.
Yes. That first one.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. And encouraging. Yes. Yes.
I imagine you've gone through a lot of woulda, coulda, shoulda in this journey.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I'm in the middle of woulda, coulda, shoulda point in my life. How do you work with that?
I was always torn between teaching and poetry, writing. And there was a point when I was a part of a group of women who met once a month, and we met here one time and brought something that was important to us. And I brought my teaching stick and my pen because I was so torn. For years and years, I was so torn, and I mostly devoted my time to teaching. And so many of these poems are from long ago. And I'm writing again, but it's starting over, really. And that, it's like having kids and wanting to write, which was also before I became a teacher, was the total split part that, you know, when I was writing, I felt bad because I wasn't with the kids. And when I was with the kids, I thought, oh, I could be writing now. It's just the way our mind works. We tend to do that. And our life is so rich that we get to do that. Just see it.
I have a question.
Yes. Well, I'm still teaching, so that to me is service. And I'm getting a whole lot of help from the Sangha and from my friends. So I just feel like I'm a little bundle of being helped at this point. And I'm accepting it now. I'm kind of enjoying it. It's taken me a long time to get to that point, to realize how helpless we all are, really, and how helpless I've been from the very beginning. When I was very young, they did an intelligence test on the local kids in the neighborhood and found out that I was smart. And so they thought that I could just do anything. And so just sent me out on errands that I was really too young to be able to cope with, and learned how to take care of everything. And so I've had to unlearn all of that, and it's been a very interesting journey. But it helps to understand, you know, where we come from, and then see what to do with it. Ben?
What is a unique way that you have found to show appreciation for being helped?
Oh, heavens, I'm always saying thank you. And it's really, some people never say thank you. They say it's a useless kind of noise that we make that we shouldn't do. But I feel so much gratitude. I can't help but say something. Yeah. Yeah.
When you're on your grumpy days,
mm-hmm.
or when you're in pain, what helps?
Stopping. Just stopping. And not trying to do anything more. Because, you know, I used to just soldier on. Boom, 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 I can do this, I can overcome this. And I could, I really could, but it was foolish. So just to stop and breathe and sit down and just be with it and not fight it. I think that fighting pain, it creates more pain. We know that now. So the best way is to embrace it. That sounds terrible, but the truth is, if we embrace it, it becomes something else. Somebody told me that once years ago, and I didn't believe it. And then my little boy, my Ben, dropped plates that he was carrying into the dining room to set the table. He dropped these heavy plates right on his foot. And And he screamed, and it was so much pain. And I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I remembered, and I said, just let it hurt. And all of a sudden he stopped screaming. It works. Just allow it. You know, allowing is a very primal suggestion in our Zen practice. We allow. If we allow, we begin to see what's actually there. Otherwise, if we're resisting and pushing it away, we can't see what it is. So it gives us a whole lot of scientific insight if we just let ourselves see what is there to see and to feel what is there to feel. Beata?
Wonderful to hear you speak. I just would like to mention that your friend and my teacher, Darlene,
yes,
was a person who, in order to teach, in order to give her gifts, she needed a lot of help.
Yes, she did.
Being helped with dressing, helped with putting on robes, tying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say to you that truly, what a gift to a student to be able to help in those intimate ways.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you. You were a big help. Anything else? Yeah. That's all right.
Community.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people that I talk to who are in pain, not physical pains, especially so much as psychic, mental, emotional
mm-hmm.
pain.
Mm-hmm.
How, and this question comes up a lot, how do we create community? How do we do that so that this loneliness, and a lot of it has to do with the lack of connection.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that? That's the one question I've been working on for quite some time. It's just, how do you create community, connections, so that there's support from people and each other? So how?
That's a very important question in this culture especially.
Yes.
We're so separated. Mm-hmm. That women's group that I mentioned was started by a woman who, when the women's rebellion began in the 60s, had been taking workshops all over town in lots of different subjects, and she made friends with the interesting women in each one. And when that came up, she called them all up and invited them into her backyard and said, we've got to do something. And so we all sat around thinking, well, we're a community. We should start meeting and figuring out what to do with our life besides being a housewife. And it was revolutionary. It was an incredible experience. And it was because she had just called us up and called us into her backyard. And we didn't all meet after that. We broke up into small groups. And our small group lasted for 25 years. And then we started passing away and getting sick and moving away, and so there wasn't any group anymore. But Grace just invented this group out of thin air. She just thought it up and made it happen. So it's not so hard. You just have to be willing to be a little forthcoming and invite people. Invite them for tea and have them all around for tea. Or for a musical thing, if you know somebody who makes music, invite somebody to make the music and friends who like to listen.
A center of community, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Each one of us is a center of community, really. We don't recognize it so much, but that's the way it is. And people get so lonely and so upset, feeling that nobody loves them. But they have to start to be the loving one first, and sometimes you just have to go out with love in your heart, and then all kinds of wonderful things can happen.
I'm amazed. So many people I run across feel like they are very unlovable.
Yes.
That's something.
Yes, it is. Well, one thing our teacher always told us, Coben, he said, just smile. Smile when you're sitting. Smile when you're walking down the sidewalk. If you do that, people will smile back. And you will change them. It's
almost
magic.
Like talking to people in lines at the grocery store.
That's it.
That's nice.
That's it. That's very nice. Yeah.
Little things.
It's all little, and you never get awarded for it. There's no Oscar for it. You know, you just have to take a humble and a very modest way of living. I think that's the other thing about America, that we just think we have to be so great all the time. But our greatness is very different from that. Our greatness, our perfection, is an inner one, and one that we don't dump on anybody. It's not like that. Thank you. Yes.
If I could comment on your last comment, it seems to me that people are a little afraid to have fun on a regular basis.
Yes, yes.
And it takes maybe a little courage to have fun because you may look a little childish.
Yes. It helps to have children around. Right. Cultivating children is very helpful. Right. Yes.
What if you make sense of suffering?
Make sense of suffering?
How do you?
How do I make sense of suffering? It's a given. It comes with the package from the very beginning. You know, we as babies, we help our mom give birth to us. It's that process is remarkable because the baby is working hard at the same time that the mom is working, and they're both hurting like mad. So we start out with this incredible pain and continue in one way or another all through our life. The suffering that Buddha was talking about was suffering that we pile on top of our normal suffering. Our broken arms and our headaches are not what he was talking about. So it's just, it's what it is to be a being I think all beings suffer in some way. You see, trees bleed. You know, grass dries up. And we don't know what things are feeling, but we're beginning to realize that things are feeling a lot more than we ever thought before. So we can feel with. That's the best way. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.